High school formats don't translate well to viewership on Twitch.
People are bags.
But no, that's not the fun of it.
Unedited, uncontrolled, unlistenable.
Hey, let's buy this jetpack.
That is even more oppressive than miracles in Legacy.
Yeah, I want to talk about a turd.
Oh, you brave souls. You survived St. Patrick's Day and 6 days since the last episode of Tryhards. Here's your reward. Another episode of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrest. He's Matt Hurley. And he's Brian Tibbetts. Welcome to this week's cast. Guys, let's get it started with all the anticipation that we have for the show tonight. What are you drinking? Matt, what do you got down there in the home of the hot brown?
Oh, I've got a Hopscape. I'm on my last can now. We picked up another six-pack when we were back up in Quincy.
Brian, what about you?
As spring approaches, my mind turns to hops and one of my favorite beers of all time, the Dark Horse Brewing Company out of Marshall, Michigan. They have the Crooked Tree India Pale Ale, and it is absolutely delicious. It's been a while since I've had this, so picked up a six-pack on Sunday night, and it is not disappointing.
One of my favorites, too. I had a chance to get on the disc golf course this afternoon with a fellow Magic player and disc golfer and picked up, I love that Goose Island does the four-pack pint cans of the Goose Island IPA. It's my absolute second favorite thing to take disc golfing with me. In the summer when it's hot, the Dale's Pale Ale is unbeatable when you're out on the course, and that's quite refreshing. But I got the two leftovers tonight, the Goose Island IPA. Hope you've got something delicious, whether it was poured or cracked, and you're ready to go for this week's episode of Tryhards. We teased you last week. Well, now we've got all the details. The Tryhards Patreon page went live on St. Patrick's Day. Guys, it was about 10 a.m. that I hit the go live button, and I got an email about three and a half hours later that we had our very first patron on Patreon. Now, one of the tiers that you can pick up on Patreon to help support the Tryhards is the tier that our first supporter picked out. A big Tryhard welcome and thank you to our very first Patreon supporter, Jedi Jules. Jedi Jules picked the Tryharder level. That is the $5 a month support showing for Tryhards at patreon.com/tryhards. Hard supporter is the introductory level for $1 a month. You'll get a big thank you and a shout out from the cast for supporting us. And you'll also help us work toward our additional content plans in the future. At the $5 level, you get access to the unedited pre- and post-show conversations. Warning, these are wildly hard to follow because I don't edit anyone. And they're suited for mature audiences only. You're also going to get at the $5 a month level, which Jedi Jules picked, you get an entry into each raffle that we do. We're going to be doing these in the futures, whether it's for products or cards or, you know, maybe some used clippings from Matt's fingernails. Who knows what we're going to be raffling off. But this level will get you one entry every time we host a raffle here on the show. For $10 a month, you can become one of the heart of the Hards at this tier with the Tryhards on Patreon. Once a month, everyone on this tier will get invited to an exclusive hour-long Google Hangout with us, unedited, uncontrolled, and basically unlistenable for any normal human being. But you want more of us? Yes, you'll be able to get it at the Heart of the Hard level. Our conversation with you, any and all topics are open for discussion. We're going to let you pick some of those. You also get an additional raffle entry to each of our raffles at that level. So that would be two entries. It includes all the previous tiers as well. And finally, you want to be a Heart of Famer? For $20 or more a month, we will extend a monthly private invite for a live call where you can play Magic Online with some number of the members of the Tryhards. Usually, tell us we're doing it wrong. This tier also brings three bonus entries into each of our raffles. So at Heart of the Hards level, you'll get five entries into each raffle that we do. And after 3 months in good standing at the tier, you'll receive free of charge one of each piece of Tryhards merchandise that comes out while you're still a member in good standing at the Heart of Famer level. So those are the things we're looking for to you. Many more things will come down the road. Guys, we also have some goals that we're working toward. At $50 a month, we'll do product reviews and have some product to give out. We're also looking at $100 a month. We'll be able to double the number of raffles that we do, getting it up to two raffles a month. After that, at the $250 plus level, we'll get a Try Hards outing each year. We'll use those funds at this tier to get all three of us to a major Magic event, most likely in North America, and we will have an exclusive Try Hard listeners gathering in which there'll be adult beverages, and we hope to be able to provide a free draft for you as well when we get together. And our final tier at $500 a month, that'll get us to a second event to host that twice a year. So those are the goals that we're working toward. Also, we'd like to set ourselves apart a bit here by letting you know that 10% of everything we get at the end of the month is going to be passed right along to mtgcast.com. While the service that they give us is free, and for you to listen, it's absolutely free, it is not free for them to host and provide such creative and wide-ranging magic podcast content. So we're going to pass 10% of all of our monthly income from Patreon right along to MTGCast. Brian, I know that you're working on your bio that we're going to post. Are there any other things that you're looking forward to posting there at TryHards on Patreon?
Putting up my sweet deck list that I brew and just having people rip them to shreds, really, on a monthly basis. I think that's going to be pretty fun. I say that in jest, but it really does come down to just feedback from the community, just engaging with all of the great people who listen to MTGCast and who take the time out of their day to listen to us. I think that's going to be actually just an absolute ball.
Matt, what are you looking forward to doing on the Patreon site?
I'm actually looking to interact more. I'd like to listen to everyone and take suggestions about what people want to hear, what we can do better, what we can do worse. And I think this Patreon's a great way to do it. Everyone kind of does the streaming. Everyone does this. Everyone does that. But I'm looking forward to be able to get enough funds going so that we can do some unique items, some unique product reviews. Most people don't know this, but sometimes you can get free products to review, but a lot of times what they'll do is, like, we recently were investigating a product review and they were willing to send us a six of an item for the price of three. That's still not free, and these items were still about $90 a piece. It wasn't exactly a small investment. That's the biggest thing. I want to start to get some unique merchandise out there. You know, that's just not the deck boxes, play mats, and card sleeves that a lot of people do.
There'll be pictures. There'll be deck lists from Brian. There'll be some other content all still to come on the patreon.com/tryhards. You can search for us on there. The page is live. And whatever you want to do to support TryHards, we would be more than welcoming for Jedi Jules going above and beyond as our very first Patreon supporter. This show dedicated to you tonight, Jedi Jules. Guys, it was Modern Masters 2017 release weekend. I got a chance to do two drafts. Brian, I know you had some travel issues and some other things. So, Matt, let's get started with you. How'd your drafts go? What was the experience like? And what was the excitement level in the room as far as the MTG played you this weekend?
Well, actually, they had the midnight draft on Thursday, which I was unable to go to due to a kind of like a family emergency. I got to the 6 o'clock one Saturday night. It ended up being 8 people that night. Everyone was loving it. Everyone was having a good time. I drafted a semi-terrible Esper bounce. The one thing about this format is it's either very quick or it gets very clogged up, and then you're just waiting for that one spell in your deck that just wins you the game, allows you Alpha Strike. Basically, I lost the first round, and due to there being two ties in the room, I got $15 of store credit. It was a $35 draft, and I think I still lost $15 on the draft. My most expensive card was Restoration Angel. Also got to draft on Sunday. Ended up drafting a Jund Sacrifice deck. I lost my first round, and my opponent kind of sat down with me, and he's a regular up there. And I'm like, you know, I don't think I have enough Sacrifice Atlas to go into this. And we did some reworking, and the deck ran a hell of a lot better. I did pull a Foil Inquisition. That Jund deck with Sacrifice Atlas, oh my gosh, with Vampire Aristocrat and Mortician Beetles is really good. I would draft this all the time if it wouldn't put me in the poorhouse, you know, drafting it 10 times and spending $350. We actually were talking, and we're trying to get an all-Masters draft together, Modern Masters 2013, and then we're debating about either Eternal Masters or Modern Masters 2015 in the middle, since it sucks so bad. And then we're going to do a pack of 2017 and do it. They're going to do it for like $40 and then provide price support. So a lot of people expressed interest in that, and hopefully we'll be able to do that like maybe next week or this weekend sometime.
That sounds like it would be an awesome experiment. Let us know how it goes. Brian, did you get a chance to draft this weekend, or did you have extenuating circumstances?
Yeah, the ladder, unfortunately. No, I went down to the shop and was talking to some people, and one of our degenerates, as Hurley likes to say, Renee, is probably the LGS owner's best friend because she's always buying boxes and is always cracking boxes. Opened a ton of Kaladesh. I think she bought a case of Kaladesh. I think she might be nearing a case of Amonkhet. I mean, she has an issue. We have issues, but she's got bigger issues, and she's proud of them. I texted you guys the screenshot of what she had opened. It was a phenomenal box. A few fetches, one foil, got a Goyf, all kinds of goodies in there. And so, no, I was down there, and it was all set that the draft was going to go at noon, which was fine. And then it was like, oh, no, we had to change it to 2. Well, that didn't work since I was – I'm going to mention something later in the cast, but 2 o'clock wasn't going to work for me because I had something scheduled later on. But it was still great talking to the guys, and everybody was having a ball and looking forward to things and stuff. But the amount of people who were standing at the counter just buying packs and saying, oh, just give me one more, just give me one more. And the LGS owner was finally like, guys, just if you want 4 packs, I don't want to run, you know, your credit card 4 times. Just buy them all at once. And they're like, but no, that's not the fun of it. So it was one of those things where it was kind of like, you know, all the fish around the guy feeding, you know, with the feed there and stuff. It was, they were all standing there with their mouths open, goggly eyed. It was pretty funny. So I hope that continues on. It does look like this is a great draft format and a whole heck of fun. So I'm really looking forward to getting in on it when I finally can.
Yeah, I encourage you to do so. Had 2 chances to draft this at the LGS over the weekend. I had a couple more money pulls than Matt did, but Matt, you're up on me in one regard. The buy-in at our LGS was $40, not $35. So hopefully my pricing made up for that. On Friday night, pack one, pick one, sit down, and I opened probably one of the most Sean cards there is, Cruel Ultimatum. So I thought, challenge accepted, we're doing this, and it actually fell together well. In my Grixis Control Cruel Ultimatum deck, I was able to pick up Gifts Ungiven, Forbidden Alchemy, Sever the Bloodline, and Mizzium Mortars, and the hits just went on from there. I got to Cruel Ultimatum 5 times on the night, and it is so good. And it feels so, and your opponent just droops in their seat. I had so much fun with this deck. The only deck that gave me trouble on the other side was the blue-white blinky deck, because so much of my removal was sorcery speed. But other than that, the thing that I learned, if you're going to be drafting this format going forward, Mizzium Mortars is a bomb. 93% of the creatures in the format are killed by its 4 damage. So overloading Mizzium Mortars is almost always a hard sweeper on one side of the board, and I used it for several comebacks on the evening. Then on Saturday, I wanted a different play experience, so I went after the Naya Token Proliferate deck. I had Giant Baitings and the one that makes the Centaur for 2 and a bunch of those things. I wasn't able to get some of the premium token makers other than a Giant Baiting. Proliferating Giant Baiting tokens, by the way, is so much fun. But the deck was brutal and fast, and I've always sort of taken a hard stance in drafts. Unless I have a super low curve aggro deck, I refuse to play fewer than 17 lands. Well, I only had 2 cards in this deck that cost more than 3, so I thought, now or never, I'll play 16 lands. And both of my losses in it weren't because I missed land drops necessarily, but I missed some opportunity cost by having to wait for those lands. So I think that's one of those things where I'm going to have some recency bias and remember that the stove is hot, and I just won't touch it. The stove being 16 lands in an aggro deck at this point, and I'll have to stick with 17 along the way. But a ton of fun over the weekend. Everyone who was in the draft seemed to be enjoying themselves. There's more than enough depth. There's more than enough fixing. And there's more than enough power to go around in this with the different styles of deck. The red-black sacrifice deck was very popular. A lot of players trying to draft that at the shop. And those that did it well were rewarded with their play over the weekend. Hopefully you had a whole bunch of fun with Modern Masters 2017 this weekend. Well, guys, it's off to exotic ports for this week's Grand Prix. Hopefully we'll have a little bit more meat to us than Gene Huebner's 60 mountain list that he registered at GP Porto Alegre. Yes, this was for real. He wanted to be part of the Grand Prix scene as they had 570 players at GP Porto Alegre. He played 1 round, then the jig was up. He said he just wanted to register and be part of the scene. And then it was off to a legacy challenge where he played his completely foiled out Omnitel deck. So Gene's 60 Mountains were more of a joke, not anything that he was worried about budget-wise. When it actually came time to play, though, you were able to do something you'd never done before, and that was watch a GP from South America. I didn't realize this at the time, guys. This was the first live feed of a Magic tournament by Wizards from South America, and I thought it came off well. You had Willie Edel and Paulo Vitor Dama de Rosa as part of the coverage team. I thought their presence really gave this a lot of oomph. In the end, it was Victor Fernando Silva on Tamer Tower. We knew it was supposed to be an up-and-comer. Wizards, they could save the format, so they didn't have to ban anything. He was able to take down Wagner William Cassetti on Mardu Cars 2-1 in the final. Brian, when you look at this, it was one Tamer Tower, the championship, two Mardu Cars, three four-color copycat decks, one black-green Delirium, and one black-green Energy in the top eight. That didn't really tell the whole story. Mardu Cars had 16 of the top 32. Did Wizards miss their window by not issuing a ban here, or is there something else we should take from this tournament?
Did they miss the window? Yeah, if we're just gonna look at GPs from here until Amonkhet is released, yes, they did miss a window. But as I've said before, I think hands off is better than hands on with the ban and restricted announcements. So I'm completely fine having decks like Tamer Tower that people are actually really tinkering with and stuff. I love Silva's list. He had four Tireless Tracker in the boards. He had four Long Tusk Cubs that's what won him game three of the finals, was a 10-10 Long Tusk Cub. It just goes to show that Mardu Vehicles isn't just the going to take it down. Four color copycat isn't just going to take it down every single week. There's other things there. Yeah, it is a little upsetting, and well, not upsetting, I guess. I don't know what the right word is for, but demoralizing that Mardu Vehicles does have such good game against so many decks out there. And for those of you who were brewing and tried to bring something new to that, kudos to you. I think it's always good to keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing. But yeah, I'm looking forward to Amonkhet and see how it shakes things up. Now, if Amonkhet doesn't shake things up, and it looks like Mardu Cars is the deck going forward, I think Wizards is going to have to take some action.
Matt, when we look at the top 32, 23 spots were occupied by Mardu Cars or four-color copycat. The only copy of Tamer Tower was the winner's, but there were two Tamer Aetherworks decks. I know you've kind of played around with both. Is this going to give Standard a little bit of diversity, or are we still kind of locked in a narrow metagame?
Most of the Tamer Tower decks that I play, I actually have a few more threats in them other than just the Towers and the Gearhulks. You know, like now the Long Tusk Cub. Any of them that have those types of cards in them that kind of give you some early pressure and then go into the late game so you're kind of a mid-range control deck, I think are the better versions. A lot of people are trying to play these hard control lists that have basically no threats in them other than, you know, those six or seven threats that you have between those two cards. I will think it's going to shake things up. I still think Wizards has kind of missed the mark as far as, you know, actually banning cards. Glad they didn't ban the cards. I agree with Brian. Hands off is right. But, I mean, there's just some – they've pushed a little bit too much in Standard here, and now this is kind of what we have. I think the format is mostly solved. I would say 90% solved. It's a high-skill format. And unfortunately, high-skill formats don't translate well to viewership on Twitch. You know, they're trying to force Magic into the esports, which we've talked about many, many times. You know, these guys are thinking 8-10 turns down the pipeline. That doesn't translate well into viewers who are just casually watching this. So it's kind of like watching chess. You know, not a lot of people will sit down and just watch chess. That's a quote-unquote solved game, but it's been, you know, around for a few hundred years.
The number that was interesting to me from the weekend was the number 570. 570. Very few times have I been to an SCG event that has had that few players. I understand that it's a massive travel commitment if you're not right in the backyard at Porto Alegre. And many players came for hundreds and hundreds of miles just to be there to get that number to 570. But when you look at the GP in Shinsoka, which had five times that number, I'm wondering if this wasn't the first drumbeat of what Matt brought up, guys, and that's that a high-skill format may be too much of a wall to overcome if you don't think you're at that level. This is starting to feel a little bit to me like the Callblade era. to where if you weren't really initiated into that deck and into the intricacies of what was going on in that format, it just looked like too tough a nut to crack. So we'll see if that's the way this ends up shaping up. GP Shinzoka, though, they could offer some answers. 2,716 players came out for Standard, and a first-timer got it done. That's right. Ryohi Kinero, he on Mardu Ballista, was his first ever GP, and he took it down 2-1 over Wentao Kui, who was also on Mardu Ballista. Mardu Ballista had a big day there. They had six of the top eight decks. That is even more oppressive than Miracles in Legacy, and Wizards hasn't done anything about either. Maybe I'm a little bit off on a spur there. Saber Tower had another top eight. And Jund Smasher. Anybody want to put some counters on Reality Smasher? That sounds pretty good to me. They were other entrant into the top eight. You saw everything from Mardu Tokens to Mardu Cars, Four Color Saheeli, Mono White Eldrazi, Marvel Copycat. This sounds like an unholy hybrid to me. Marvel Copycat also putting the deck into the top 32. Matt, a more diverse metagame with a bigger tournament. Do you think those go hand in hand, or is this just an aberration?
Once these formats get, you know, quote unquote solved, people want to try out new decks. And like I mentioned a few weeks ago, too, these decks are starting to kind of prey upon themselves and become a little inbred. So then that's the time for these new decks to jump. Unfortunately, what that usually means, like maybe this mono white Eldrazi list, maybe it's got two good weeks in it. Then it's going to be time for Amaketch to drop. So, I think it's the bigger formats definitely land a little bit more of a diverse metagame overall. It's just that it's not going to be a permanent metagame. I mean, I think it's kind of like watching the smaller tournaments, you know, the mocks or anything like that. You can't take that as a metagame, but you can use those decks as a starting point to kind of tweak your own deck.
Brian, most interesting graphic that I saw was actually put together by the Mothership. They collated results from Pro Tour Aether Revolt all the way through this weekend and looked at the macro archetypes which had made top eight at all premier events. Obviously, we're talking about Standard here. Mardu vehicle variants, 28. The entirety of the other top archetypes only were able to put together 28 of their own appearances. 12 for Saheeli variants, 11 for black-green archetypes, and then 5 for all other archetypes. And they're obviously looking at this as macro archetypes. Is this the kind of data that's going to tell Wizards, yeah, we're probably going to need to ban something after Amonkhet unless there's a major shakeup?
Oh, for sure. That's absolutely for sure. That's like you said, you uttered the unholy words of Cobblade era. You can't keep going forward with multiple months down the line with Mardu vehicles performing at that level. It's not being checked by anything else. I have no doubt in the community to brew and to come up with things. However, there's only so much you can do, because if that's the best deck in the format, that's the best deck in the format. And the thing that comes to mind is, what do you take out of that deck? Is it Heart of Kirin? Is it Gideon? I know Hurley's been saying for the longest time, Gideon should have been banned a long time ago, etc. So guys, what is Wizards going to key in on? Banning a Planeswalker, that's not been done before since Jace the Mind Sculptor, and I think everybody kind of nodded their head and said, yep, that's definitely something that should happen. Is this the time for Gideon to go, or is it something else in that list that really pushes that deck just above every other tier one deck?
I think there's probably a few targets you could hit in there. Heart of Kirin being one of them. That's one of the decks that it's tough to ban cards out of, because Aethersphere Harvester is just going to jump right in that spot. Is it as powerful? No, but I mean, I would say Aethersphere Harvester is probably 85-90% as powerful as Heart of Kirin is. And the only issue there is that when in the mirror match, they don't trade. That's a really, really tough one and crack, because you don't want to ban, like you said, Brian, you don't really want to ban your namesake cards, which now are your face walkers, as Saffron Allen likes to call them. Unfortunately, I think Gideon's got to be the target there. And I think it's because the overall health of the format, that it's just not played in just that deck, but it's played in any white deck. Basically, you start with four Gideon.
I think there's two cards in that list that I would take a look at if I wanted to preserve, as you mentioned, the face walker for Wizards. And that is Toolcraft Exemplar and Unlicensed Disintegration. You have a rare and an uncommon there. Unlicensed Disintegration really comes from the family tree of Blightning, where it's so hyper-efficient at doing two things for three mana. And Toolcraft Exemplar is the number one enabler for Heart of Kirin. Remember, Heart of Kirin has a crew cost of three, but the other thing is its alternate crew cost of using the Planeswalker Loyalty and it having Vigilance. So the fact that it is able to play offense and defense, it is Matt miles ahead of Aethersphere Harvester in my book, because Aethersphere Harvester makes you make a decision. It can't play offense and defense at the same time, like Heart of Kirin. And if you get rid of some of the easy enablers in that deck, because if you don't use Toolcraft Exemplar, it's pretty hard to come up with that three crew cost if you're looking to continue to use your Gideon and the loyalty counters on it to advance your board position or maybe make an emblem and then keep that Gideon around. So I think there's some other costs that could be pressured by different angles if Wizards took away some of the underpinnings of the deck, because what plays the other two besides Mardu Vehicles right now? You've got a couple of Grixis Control pieces that might use Unlicensed Disintegration, and then you've got a fringe white aggro deck that might use Toolcraft Exemplar. I think those two are ones that would be subtle chops to the deck and would maybe take some of its power away without just murdering the deck outright.
I never really thought of the Toolcraft Exemplar and the what's the other one too, the red white one?
That's Veteran Motorist, and most of the lists have actually gone away from him in some instances in order to fit Ballista in.
I think they'll just plop a Veteran Motorist in there, but of course then you just hit it, just slows the deck down by one turn. So no, Sean, that's some really, really good points. I didn't even think about that.
We'll see whether Wizards decides to use Amonkhet as the pressure release valve, so to speak, for this issue coming up after the Pro Tour in a few weeks, or if we'll be looking at a ban right after that. As for this weekend, just GP Orlando. That's limited. Fun to watch, fun to play in, not so much fun to break down afterwards. So we'll congratulate the winner as we always do, and then get into some other things that we've had saved for next week's show. That brings us to the news for the week this week. Chapman Sim is a name you should know if you read text coverage. He wrote a very interesting article about this metagame that we've been knocking around for MTG Mint Card called A Narrow Metagame Isn't All Bad. You want to hear, if you're against this narrow metagame and you want to hear a pro argument, I'll have the link in the show notes. Go over, it's well thought out, won't take that long to read it. A Narrow Metagame Isn't All Bad. Essentially, it gives you a target to shoot at if you want to get your brew on, and you have fewer decks that you really have to know inside and out when you play against, rather than the alternate reality, which is what we see in Modern right now, where the deck's so wide open you might not even recognize some of the cards that your opponent is playing in their decks. Once we go to Amonkhet, that could help some of that, as we've been talking about, but what about after that? Guys, let's put on the Vorthos hats for just a second here, something we don't do too often on Tryhards. There were two articles written last week speculating, suggesting, hopefully longing for, one might say, a return trip to Dominaria. Where do you want to go? Brian, if you were Wizards and you were taking us to the next plane, where would you want to go? And if it's not somewhere to revisit, just give me kind of an idea of the theme of a plane that you'd like to see. It doesn't have to be super fleshed out.
Kind of caught me flat-footed, I hate to tell you. Dominaria would be great. I would love to see kind of a return to the roots and, you know, get those young whippersnappers all caught up on what us old guys had to deal with way back in the day and just how tough, you know, the slog was walking uphill both ways to school. You know, one thing that I would love to see, and this is something I've been thinking about since the Theros block, was what about kind of like just an underworld theme? Something that's just dark and dirty. This is where the souls have been for a very long time in whatever religion or whatever idea you've got about the afterlife. Kind of going with, I love the idea of spirits. I love the idea of, you know, recursion, etc. That seems to be a pretty cool idea, that you don't just have to be on a plane, but what about under the plane? You don't want to scare off, of course, the 13 and 14-year-olds, or God forbid, the 10-year-old daughters of old Magic players who bring their daughters down to the shop and, you know, hey, let's buy this death pack that is coming out soon. But Something like that, I think, would be really, really fascinating to explore.
And since we're here with the Vorthos hats for a second, that may be the gateway back into the game for Elspeth. Remember, I don't think we've seen the last of her after what happened on Theros. Matt, I know you've given this some thought over time. What would you like to see? Is there a plane you'd like to return to, or a theme of a plane that you'd like to see Wizards explore?
If we return to Dominaria, I don't want, since Dominaria was technically, you know, destroyed, the Sundering? I don't actually think that we should return to a quote-unquote plane, but I think it should be the Great Eternities, or wherever, you know, the planeswalkers, when they travel between planes, they go into this other plane. I think that should be the plane. And, you know, I'm going very never-ending story here. That's one of my favorite things to do. But that plane should kind of be bits of kind of destroyed planes, or, you know, the shards when they were, you know, when everything was kind of blown to bits. All that, and so it would kind of have a future site theme to it, where maybe you know, you put some iconic cards in there, or put some iconic ideas, and told a story through it via, you know, kind of like the Weatherlight story, about maybe the Gatewatch gets trapped there, and then they have to figure out how to escape there, and that's kind of the big bad, is how do I escape this plane? I like that idea, because that would give a lot of the older players, they'd be like, oh man, do you, even if the card's terrible, you know, you remember when this card was in Standard and they could put it in, that'd be an easy way to reprint cards. That would be an easy way to pull in old players. It'd be an easy way to bridge the gap between old and new players. And then it would be a really unique theme where maybe you wouldn't have a big baddie, but it was due to some accident or something like that with the Gatewatch, and the Gatewatch was trapped there and they had to escape.
Okay, so my follow-up question is, what is the nothing? Is it a sorcery or an enchantment?
Ooh, I think it's enchantment, and I'm just going off Nethervoid and the Abyss.
I like it. If they came together, we'd have to look out for the nothing. All right, it seems interesting that there's so much conjecture around a possible return to Dominaria right now. Vorthos hats accomplished here on this episode of Tryhards. Getting back to what happens, or well, didn't happen in this case, Matt, one of your most recent predictions didn't turn out so well. You had everyone salivating over the fact that we may soon have $10 Ancestral Visions. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Wizards released the full list for the new dual decks, Mind versus Might. Yeah, I think we're all disappointed.
Yeah, this, yeah, I want to talk about a turd. No, didn't have the Mistress Boblet, didn't have the Ancestral Visions, didn't have any really snow-covered themed cards in it, which kind of blew my mind. Also, it's actually a red, the Lovisa Cold Eyes is actually a red-green deck. So they did reprint a couple of cool cards, but I'm not sure why they upped the MSRP from $20 to $25 and then didn't, you know, they said, oh, it's better balanced now. Well, yes and no, I guess it is, but it's still got the same level of cards in it. I mean, it's got three Rift Bolts in it. I'm just blown away that they knew they were unbanning it. And dual decks are literally probably one of the easiest things to edit. They unbanned Ancestral Visions a year ago, so this dual deck was probably finalized, I would guess, in July, August timeframe. I'm just confused as to why they knew they were unbanning Ancestral Visions and didn't reprint it. Maybe we'll see it at Amaket, but I doubt it.
We'll see if those deck lists enable what Matt called maybe the highest-selling dual deck of all time when he was trying to project. Now that those lists have been revealed, I think that might be another swing and a miss. Swing and a miss.
It was a swing and a miss.
Swing and a miss. Yeah,
you know, I will say this, though. These look like fun decks to play, though.
Yeah, they do.
Don't you agree?
Yep.
Well, I think they're definitely fun, and they're definitely they're balanced, too.
Yeah, they're balanced. I mean, when you've got Goblin Electromancer, you've got Young Pyromancer, Jorian Ruin Diver, Spellheart Chimera, which is close to my heart, Tolrant Sky Summoner in the Mind deck, and then, you know, Guttural Response, Sylvan Might. You've got a lot of good cards that make for good gameplay experience. But yeah, you're right, Hurley. It doesn't really do anything to kind of include more cards into the card pool that are played on a competitive level. And overall, I have no problem with Wizards doing this. They have so many different audiences. I think the kitchen table players are vastly, vastly more important in some ways than guys who play on the tournament scene on a regular basis. So making good gameplay should be their first priority. It would be nice to see a little bit of a bone thrown here and there. So anyway, I might pick up one of these and just kind of say, hey, let's crack this open and see how it goes.
We'll see if he likes it after he picks it up and plays through it a few times. If you'd like to watch Well, we haven't installed that full camera all over Brian's house yet, but there is a chance for you to watch more Magic being played thanks to our friends at Star City Games. Matt, you were pointing out that they started a new video daily digest, and this just went live the day that we're recording this episode of Tryhards.
Today, Ross Merriam actually plays the Bug deck. Oh, I'm sorry, Sultai deck in Modern, and then it's a basically just a video playthrough of the deck, but it's called the Daily Digest. They kind of walk through the deck like they normally did, but now they're presenting video with it. The other really nice thing about this is they put this one, since this is on the select, or I'm sorry, it's on the the select side, so the free side, they put this one up on YouTube. So if you subscribe to SCG's YouTube app, everyone has Roku boxes, Xboxes, whatever, to watch stuff on their TV. It'll pop right up on there, whereas previously they were using their own internal player and they wouldn't pop up immediately. But now this one popped up, and that's the only reason I knew about it. It popped up at like 11:30 on my YouTube app and said Star City Games uploaded a new video. They've still got a couple little presentation things to work out here, but it was nice to see kind of a different bug control deck in Modern.
It's interesting where SCG has gone, Brian. You have content creators like Saffron Olive, Magic Man Sam, Sybin Lore, who do these feature videos, whether it's on history or art or decklist or a number of other things. But SCG, first with their daily updates that Jeremy Noel does, and now with this, they seem to be getting into the almost daily on-demand video. I think this is something that could change the way that we start to interact with Magic a little bit.
Oh, yeah. And Star City, as we know, has such a huge audience built in already. People are tuning in. And as Star City kind of pulls back from its more, you know, Grand Prix presence, and as it pulls back from its offerings kind of west of the Mississippi, maybe west of the Ohio River, we might want to say, it might be just trying to do that. It's becoming more of a web presence. Jeremy Noel's doing a phenomenal job with the daily update and things. So, yeah, this seems like a natural progression. I think Star City, people want to see that customer service out there. And if they can do it kind of via web content, that's great. The customer service is so good at their events that I am a little bummed that they're not going to be doing more of that. But maybe this is just a little transitional phase for them, and we get to see both. We get the best of both worlds in a couple of years. Maybe they're going to get back into the GP scene, back into more events, you know, nationwide, et cetera. But for right now, I'd say that seems like a totally natural progression for them to be more web-based than just being the place that people check prices of cards and read awesome articles.
If there's anything we've missed you'd like to hear us comment on or something that's on your mind, hit us up. You can email us at thetryhards3@gmail.com. That's in the show notes as well. We'd love to hear from you. We give a little extra attention to our Patreon patrons, so maybe that'll be a little carrot in front of the cart and horse for you to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/tryhards. You can check it out for yourself. There's a level for everyone. That takes us, well, right up to the level that you have to have an exclusive key to get to. Matt wears his around his neck on a chain of feathers to hold up that golden key, that gets you into the finance elevator. Matt, you're going to pay three to cycle. How much are we going to pay for that privilege this week with Street Wraith in the elevator?
You're not going to pay for the privilege. You are going to sell that privilege. Street Wraith has shot up to $8, $7. What I'm going to tell you is just sell these. Keep four if you want to play Death Shadows. Dig through your bulk. I mean, I'm sure most people listening to this has random bulk, you know, in their closet or whatever. Dig through it. Trade these cards out. Take them down to the shop. Sell them out, because any place that has cycling in it, they can easily do something with this and reprint it. Sell your Street Wraith because they're way, way too expensive right now.
Let me just finish clicking here. I think I just made $21 selling the Street Wraiths that I just picked out of my bulk while you were mentioning that. All right, Street Wraiths on the move. You get paid for that privilege and don't have to pay three. That brings us up to 3 minutes to brew this week. Brian's been on quite the run lately. What do you got for us now, big man?
We've had all kinds of different things, and you guys have just been up to the challenge every single time, so I think we're going to go a little bit legendary this week. One card that was reprinted in Modern Master 17, which has been one of my favorites, and I fashionably like this card because of how it functions in a specific build of Miracles and Legacy, Venser Shaper Savant. 2 blue, 2 other for a 2/2 legendary flash human wizard. When Venser enters into play, return target spell or permanent to its owner's hand. We haven't seen him much outside of Legacy in the Miracles build. Gentlemen, you are up to the task of seeing, does this have a play in Modern? 3 minutes to brew, Venser, Shaper, Savant. Sean, I think I'm going to start with you this week. What do you got?
If it's anything like I saw in the Modern Masters 2017 draft, where a gentleman had Venser and Thragtusk, yeah, this has plenty of legs. I didn't have to play him, but I was just watching, and he was brutalizing people with that combination. So, Venser, I think any time you can slow the format down enough to where value plays become equity worthy, then Venser's going to have a place in that format. I think Modern's a little bit too fast right now, and if you're going to dedicate a deck to Venser, I have no idea what it would be. My first inkling says it's going to be Grixis, simply because you can get the Creeping Tar Pit to use as a finisher along with him. You've got more control elements. You've got some Planeswalkers that play that way with Liliana of the Veil. Maybe Esper is the way to go, but I think we've seen a framework for that in Legacy with Miracles, and people might be afraid that it wouldn't be as powerful, so they're not going to experiment with it. I think you have to get the format to slow down a turn, maybe a turn and a half, before it's worth experimenting with this. But if you wanted to rogue build something and find a way to do that, Venser's always had tons of power, even in a format without Caracas, where you can't necessarily abuse him over and over. He's still very unique and very powerful.
I don't actually think you need to slow it down. I think the format in Modern just needs to go more towards a control. Could you imagine bouncing an Ancestral Vision that somebody has waited three turns to pop? I think this card is super powerful. With all the blink shenanigans that are in the new Modern Masters, I do think we're going to see some rogue deck builders, and maybe some that are decent, kind of go into a blink theme where, you know, it's more of a going back to the Restoration Angel, Venser, this type of control deck, and, you know, like the value engines, as you like to call it. It didn't occur to me that people don't understand how Venser works. One of the guys who he started playing, I think he said in like Innistrad, he said, so I'll bounce that back to your hands. And I'm like, why didn't you just bounce that back to my hand? I had cast something. I'm like, why didn't you bounce that to my hand when you had the mana open before it entered the battlefield and I gained life? And he goes, I didn't know I could do that. I think it's an odd card. It's one that's difficult to reprint, and it's difficult to put in a set because it's such an odd card, but it's absurdly powerful.
I'm with you there, Hurley. Here's the thing. One of the things I love to think about is what happens if they ever unban Jace TMS in Modern. And if that's the case, if they do unban Jace, I think that Venser is just an absolutely natural progression into a blue-white or blue-something build for that card. I do think that with the white-blue decks that are out there right now, I know that the blue-white control decks that kind of feature Colonnade and a million counter spells are really, really good. And I think a one-of Venser in those decks is actually very, very good. It's kind of, I don't know, a fifth cryptic command. His time to shine has not maybe come yet, just because there's not enough supporting cast around him. I think there's enough there. In draft, however, Sean, putting Venser and Thragtusk in the same sentence kind of made me throw up a little bit. And so that's that sounds amazing if I'm playing that, and it sounds awful if I'm playing against that. Yeah, kudos to that guy for getting those two cards in the same draft. I'm very intrigued by this card, that it maybe wants to stretch its legs outside of Legacy, and I hope it happens sooner than later.
Venser, Shaper, Savant, our 3 minutes to brew this week on Tryhards. We've walked right up to just about the end of the show. What do you do to get better at Magic this week? You've got an opportunity to get a little bit better in life. Well, I'm going to presume that since you're listening to this show, and that's to support us on Patreon. Patreon.com/tryhards. We're not going to beat you up about it every week, but since it went live, since we last talked to you, we want to make sure that you know it's there, should you choose to accept. All right, Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Played some Modern Masters and didn't pay attention to Modern or Standard. And it was glorious, let me tell you. It was nice to be able to just show up and play. Probably some of the most fun I had drafting in a very, very long time. Not that any of the other sets I drafted previously were bad, but this one just, it's so much closer to modern Masters 2013 than 2015 that it's not even funny. So I look forward to drafting this as much as I possibly can.
I was sitting on the couch the other night, and the NCAA tournament has concluded for the evening. By the way, my bracket looked amazing after Friday night, and then it just imploded like a star that had run out of hydrogen in order to power its, you know, nuclear reaction, and just sunk right down into a black hole after Saturday and Sunday. So, as I'm looking for ways to fill up my time after wadding up said bracket, I grabbed the iPad and opened the Magic Duels app and just got to playing around. I had done the story mode and whatnot, but I had never jumped online to play. Obviously, this is a beginner-focused version of Magic Online. And that's the reason I wanted to check it out, because as I mentioned on the show last week, I am very soon going to start tutoring a new Magic player. So I wanted to see if it would be good for her as a way to get into the game and to sort of practice and get that experience. Here's what I found out very quickly. People are d-bags. Even on this program online. All right, this is supposed to be intro friendly. And we're talking, now there's no chat or any of that, but as soon as it's apparent to someone that they've lost the game, they pull every salty move in the book, from trying to get you to let your side time out so they get a win, to everything. This is the intro product. Please, act accordingly. Show some class when you're playing online. Have a little bit of dignity. Or if you don't want to wade through the painful end of the game, just hit the concede button. It's right there. Just hit the concede. And don't try those backdoor scummy ways to try and pick something up over somebody who is most likely experiencing an online version of Magic for one of the first times. I just think that's a vile way to introduce someone to the larger community. Please be cognizant of that and give a good experience, whether you're playing face-to-face or playing online in any form. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Well, for the umpteenth week in a row, I didn't play any Magic, it seems like, so that's terrible. I have been heavily goldfishing, if this counts, the Mardu Tokens deck that, thank you all for your input last week after the cast. That was actually really, really helpful. I have made changes to the deck, and it's running so much more smoothly, and can be kind of scary at times. With just how efficient it is with getting creatures on the board and getting those creatures large and getting your opponent dead, which is obviously the point. Yeah, I was a little bummed last week not to be able to draft, but it put things in perspective. Two things I want to mention. First of all, the reason I couldn't go to the 2 p.m. draft as opposed to the noon draft was there was a benefit for a teacher at my school. Her 18-month-old son has recently been diagnosed with leukemia, and they've been down at St. Jude's in Memphis for, oh gosh, now 6 months, I want to say. And the people in St. Jude's in Memphis are just unbelievably kind and caring, and you know, everything is done without cost. You just go down there, and it's just about getting your kid better. So having kids, that kind of hit home to me. So we had a benefit for their family. So I just went and, you know, helped serve some food and, you know, talked with a bunch of people from the community. And at the end of the night, we were able to raise upwards of $35,000 for this family, which was unbelievable. And since she's a public school teacher and, you know, she doesn't get paid for not teaching, obviously. So we're able to basically cut her a check for roughly what her yearly salary would be. So she doesn't have to worry about that. Put it all in perspective that I can miss a draft Saturday, you know, to do something really, really good. The other thing that I was really put in perspective, and something that I'm trying to take to heart, is the whole lifestyle of gaming and things. And sometimes, you know, people kind of look at us as, you know, we are unhealthy. We sit indoors all day. The sunshine kind of makes us Gollum-like. You know, looking at this big yellow orb in the sky and not wanting to come outdoors. We don't eat as well as we should. We don't drink as well as we should. Brian DeMars on Channel Fireball had a wonderful article about the life of a gamer, what he's been doing to get healthier in the last, I think, 6 or 7 months. He's dropped something like 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't anything amazing. He's not running 10 miles a day. He's not doing anything crazy. He's doing things such as eating oatmeal and tea as opposed to two pieces of pizza and a Mountain Dew, which, as he says, saves him something like 47 meals per year in calorie counting. it's just staggering numbers. And so he says he feels better. Obviously, the travel of Magic players and tournament play is kind of still grinding and things, but you just have to be cognizant of this stuff. So as someone who tries to get out and do something healthy at least once a day, I found that really refreshing and something that, you know, a lot of us could just kind of keep at the forefront or moving forward, because it is a grind. It really is. And so we can be healthy and be Magic players, which sometimes doesn't go hand in hand, it seems. So maybe that's what I did to get better at Magic. I do have on the docket that I am going to play Modern on Wednesday. I'm going to run out Mardu tokens and see how it goes up against the field down at the LGS, and I will report back.
You'll have to get that list posted on the Patreon page, patreon.com/tryhard. So, you brave soul, hanging out with us for another episode of Tryhards. Hope it was as good for you as it was for us. We'll see you next week here on Tryhards.